There is a tradition at Jewish weddings where during the ceremony, a glass, is taken and it is dropped to the ground. A rabbi explained why this is done. We hold aloft a glass, let it fall and be shattered to atoms, and then pointing to the fragments, we exhort the young people to guard jealously the sacred relationship into which they have entered, since once it is fractured, it can never be restored. Jesus Christ understands how easily marriage can be fractured, and therefore, in his conversation with the Pharisees, he does recognize the Mosaic allowance for divorce in this way. He says it's because of people's hardness of heart. It's because of what happens in lives where they become hardened to God and they become hardened to one another as husband and wives. And so Jesus says, yes, I know that marriages can be shattered. But then notice what he does. He goes behind the Mosaic provision to creation. Deacon Troy gave an amazing homily today on marriage. He focused on that aspect of how our Catholic understanding is different from what is happening in the world. So I'm not going to focus on that. What I want to focus on is why the Catholic Church understands the indissoluble nature of marriage. And we also claim that marriage is not a human institution in the sense that it did not originate with us. And we have this on the highest authority, the incarnate Son of God. Listen to what he says again. But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. They are no longer two, they are one. And what God has put together, let no one separate. Jesus is planting here what I'm referring to as the sacramental seed. He is helping us to see that marriage is intrinsic to creation, and it originates in the very heart and mind of God. So what do I mean by a sacrament? I never read the Baltimore Catechism because I wasn't a Catholic when I was a little boy, although I do want to read it because some people say it's really concise and good. And it has the most concise definition of a sacrament that you can find. So this is from the Baltimore Catechism. A sacrament is an outward sign instituted by Christ to give grace. Well, what's a sign? A sign points beyond itself to a deeper reality. The sign can show us, oh, you have to turn left, you have to turn right. The sign shows you where you have to go. So a sacrament is a sign that's visible that points to the grace of Jesus. Now, I've mentioned this word before, but it's such a beautiful word, it bears repeating, and for us to really understand its meaning. And it's the word grace in Greek. And in Greek, the word for grace is charis, from which we get words like charismatic, charisma, Eucharist. Now, think about that word, charis. Think about charisma. Who has more charisma than anyone else? Jesus Christ. Think about it. For 2,000 years, he has so much charisma that he draws people to his altar. More people today will come to receive the sacrament of his body and blood than any other single activity, even the NFL. And that's important for us to remember because of the drawing power of grace. And we need to appreciate that Jesus has given to the church seven sacraments. The altar, the Eucharist, is one primary means by which he draws people to himself. But the sacrament of marriage is to be another means to the same end. I came across about 6 months ago what is referred to as the sacramental principle. And I have found this one of the most helpful things I have studied and read in the last half year. This is the sacramental principle. What is always and everywhere true must be noticed, accepted, and celebrated somewhere, sometime. Now that's a bit of a mouthful, so let me say it again. So what is everywhere and always true? What is that? That God, the Blessed Trinity, is a community that lives in perfect unity. A community that lives in perfect unity. That is the most fundamental truth of our Catholic teaching. But that's big. I can't get a handle on that. So that which is always and everywhere true has to be accepted, noticed, and celebrated somewhere, sometime. Now think about that sacramental principle in relation to Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2. In Genesis chapter 1, which Jesus quotes, we're told that God made them male and female in his own image. Now, if you've ever read Genesis 1 closely, you'll notice something. The man and the woman are the pinnacle of creation. And it's as if all of Genesis chapter 1 is this great procession with all of the animals, all of the birds, all of creation is entering into a procession to worship God. And who comes at the end of the procession? The human being. But here's the thing about Genesis chapter 1. It is only in relation to the human being that the Genesis writer says they are made male and female. Now that doesn't mean every other creature is unisex. We know that that's not true. They are also made male and female, but it's only in relation to the human being. Because you see, the human being in a particular way embodies the very reality of God's image in the world. So get the connection. Genesis 1 has in relation to marriage what is always and everywhere true. That man and woman are made in the image of God, and there's a particular way that relationship becomes the sacrament of marriage. But then notice what happens in Genesis 2. That which is always and everywhere true has to be noticed, accepted, and celebrated somewhere, sometime. And what happens in Genesis 2? Woo-hoo! This at last is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She is woman. I'm going to cling to her. Do you get it? Do you see how beautiful this is? Do you see the Bible is like unlike any other book? Because it teaches us grace. It teaches us truth. This is the sacramental principle. This is the beginning of the Bible. And do you know what happens in the fourth to last chapter of the Bible? It's Revelation chapter 19. And I looked, and there in heaven was the Lamb and the marriage supper of the Lamb. Here's the main point of my homily today. We will only in heaven experience the fullness of community lived in unity when we share in the life of the Blessed Trinity. But for now, in this world, God has given us this sacrament between one man and one woman seeking to live together for life that is to be a representation of that. Now let me just say that the church truly understands and is pastorally, I think, incredibly sensitive and growing in this sensitivity for those who suffer the reality of divorce. And some of you here have experienced that. And the Lord understands that pain. He understands the reality of how our human brokenness affects our lives. But he also always wants to lay out to us the sense of what it is to be brought back into right relationship with him. And one of the things that touches my heart so deeply is when I've worked through with a couple who have been previously married, and we've worked through all of the pain of recalling that relationship, and we've gone to the marriage tribunal, and they've been able to procure an annulment, and then to validate their marriage, because often they have been married civilly, and to restore them to the full communion of the church. Some Sunday I will preach a homily that focuses more on this. But I just can't go on without acknowledging this reality, because I know it affects many who are listening today. But let's turn back now to conclude with this understanding of the sacrament of marriage. And I want to share with you now a quote from a man by the name of Dietrich von Hildebrand. He was the person Adolf Hitler hated almost more than anyone else. And during the 1930s and the early 40s, if you were found with a book by Hildebrand, you could be sent to a concentration camp. Why did Hitler so despise this man? Because von Hildebrand was so deeply Catholic. That's words for us to meditate upon in our own day. The more deeply Catholic we become, in some ways, the more the world will hate us. But we need not be afraid, because we have as examples someone like von Hildebrand, who wrote words like this. A husband and wife become conscious of one another, and making the other the object of his or her contemplation and responses, each can spiritually immerse himself in the other. The focus here is on this word contemplation. The husband makes the wife the focus of his contemplation. The wife makes the husband the focus of her contemplation. And there's a connection between this word contemplation and the word adoration. The word adore is something that actually will find, again, its fulfillment in the ecstasy of heaven. But this word is a beautiful word when you break it apart. The ad part of adoration means to, and orare means speak. So the word adore means to speak, but it has a deeper meaning. It also means face to face and mouth to mouth, smoochy smoochy. That is the meaning of the word adoration. But here's the connection. There is no way you're going to have real smoochy smoochy unless you are truly learning to communicate in marriage. Because the face-to-face, mouth-to-mouth, is the fruit of walking side by side in deep interpersonal unity. And that's the beauty of Genesis 2. Where was Eve taken from? From Adam's side. Because she complements him in perfect equality. And it's as husband and wife learn this reality that we can hear the beautiful words from today's psalm. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be happy, and it shall go well with you. I'm here to tell you, and I know, because as you know, I'm married. Without communication, it ain't going anywhere. With a desire to grow in communicating with one another, that is the labor of marriage. Out of that, as our psalm says, you shall be happy and it will go well with you. And then, with this image, consider the following. The community in unity of the Blessed Trinity. The love between the Father and the Son proceeds in the Holy Spirit coming forth from their relationship. The love between a husband and a wife leads to the procession of children coming forth from their love. It goes all the way back to Genesis 1, the great procession of creation. It's to find that same expression as our psalm says, Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots round about your table. The man shall be blessed who fears the Lord. Ah, now it's the unity between the husband and the wife that gives birth to the community that is the family. And that is why the Catholic Church is the only institution, I think, you can correct me if you know of another, in the world today that holds to the unitive and the procreative reality of what marriage is intended to be. So, such love, when noticed, accepted, and celebrated every day and everywhere in marriage, will allow husbands and wives to guard jealously the sacred relationship that is marriage, and thus be a sacrament of Jesus' love until that day you and I will behold the Blessed Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and we will enter into the marriage banquet of heaven that will go on forever and ever and ever. This is what the Catholic Church believes the sacrament of marriage to be.